conscience before the chaser, afterwards, when the desire is satisfied and he can no longer justify what he did, and now conscience comes in and he feels guilty. So he goes through two phases, and then he abstains. It's a cycle. But that's not going, unless the mind comes into the picture, he's not going to sexually from the meaning. That's not the idea of something being good and the idea of something being bad is not what the realm means by apparent truth. He means that whole realm. He's talking about a whole new realm. You can't, you see, there's a whole new realm of that man lives down the world with two sets of truths. Objective truth, necessary truth, and now he's in a different system. He has a whole system, which we call apparent truth, a system of morals, and ethics, and morals, ethics, whatever you want to call it. And that is an illustration, or is manifest, that's based upon the fact that man what brings that whole world into being is the conflict. That he's an instinctual being on the one hand, he has a title on the, even in the instinctual framework, he's in a state of conflict. The conflict between the instinctual and the opposing force creates the need for a resolution. That's the world of apparent truth. And that's what he's saying. The most manifest, he didn't have that. There was no conflict. You see? He was not a creature of conflict at that point. And if he's not a creature of conflict, then the entire world of apparent truth does not come into being. Saying like this, that world, the realm is thinking about a realm of apparent truth. Meaning not necessary truth. Because they're situational. Due to the fact that you have a particular situation. Now I'm saying that comes into being due to the fact that man is in a state of conflict with regard to his instinctual existence. And that conflict came into being after the fact. If he does not have this conflict, then he would not be able to relate to this whole realm. I tried to give the example of the person that for example, a person that doesn't have any desire for smoking. Right? As opposed to a person who is a smoker. A person who isn't, but he has to maintain all kinds of rules. When he can smoke and how much he can smoke, and if he does smoke, then he has to take another drink or a vitamin of this. And, you see, all kinds of rules. That whole, now a person that's not in the world of smoking can't relate to that whole system. There's no reality for him. Now, in that sense, before the faith, Adam could not relate to this whole world of apparent truth. It had no reality for him because all of his energy was in the world of Chachma. Now, after the faith, however, when the energy was transformed to the instinctual, so that alone wouldn't so. And the new factor came into his instinctual life now consisted of basically the conflict between desires and opposing forces. And the need for a resolution, now he's involved in the need for a resolution. Now he's been brought into this new realm, this realm of apparent truth. He's forced to enter into this realm of apparent truth. And the point is that before him, he didn't have to deal with this whole issue. He illustrates that by the idea of the nudity, that there was no thing in the nudity thing. This whole concept of nudity didn't exist for him. There was no concept of nudity. Now there's a concept of nudity. We don't take the Rambam. When the Rambam says that he, beforehand he was only involved in Tov HaRa. And if you read it superficially, it seems like he didn't know what Tov is and what Ra is. If you're going to take that totally literally, and say, didn't he know that it was good to follow God's command? No, he didn't know that. So then, what? That's not Anas Sheker, or someone mentioned about killing. That if he were to kill Chava, wouldn't he know that would be, what was that, false? He had to. By definition, you know what I mean? If you were to ask Adam at that point in time, is it good to follow the will of God, or is it bad to disobey God? What would he say? He couldn't answer the question. And then you can say that the one, what's the point of commanding him? By commanding him, you may choose the good. You tell him to choose. So that's, you know what I mean? That first takes, he knew the terminology that there's such a thing which is good. That has to be. But what the Rambam over here is referring to a system, which is, that's the essence of describing a system. A system of morality, which is a whole system of apparent truth. That's what I believe he means. Principles of power, he's talking about the principles that emerge in the system of all our principles of morality that we live by. That, you know, one shouldn't go around naked, that one should control one's instincts. That's what he's referring to. The principles, he says, not the meaning of the word. You're right about that. He knew that murder was bad. Yeah, he did have morality. That's a good point. I mean, we have to explore this. We were asking the question, what about the nullified laws? Did he have the nullified laws at that point? And Chazal seems to indicate from Vayetzava that when God commanded them not to eat of the tree, from the fruit of the tree, that they learn it from there, and the word is never, but yeah, he has that from the system of law. So we're not talking, so you're right. In a sense, you're right. The phenomenon of apparent truth, you know, morality, did exist, but he wasn't involved in conflict with the God commanded. All the laws that we have now on the book, at least that he couldn't have under, you know, like, to what extent you're dealing with your in business, to what extent are you allowed to do things, and what would be considered the Geneva Stars, and what wouldn't be the, all those laws that pertain to the limiting, you know, the extent of how far can you express your aggression to somebody else, you know, and so on and so forth, all the principles, that he would have no relationship with, because he didn't have the emotional desire to kill his neighbor. Okay? He didn't have such an emotional desire, so if you don't have such an emotional desire, you can't understand the principles behind it. You see, if you went, like, you enter these societies and you see that all, you know, they have all kinds of rules and regulations regarding things which you can't relate to at all, I mean, you wouldn't understand them, what they're talking about. Mechutz means, Mechutz is not just, I don't think we should take Mechutz in that type of a manner, that it means that whenever he saw something, he had to go for it. That's not what it means. But the essence of the Mechutz means that the Yetzer Hatov that was of Mitzvim, the negative is that the basic thrust of his energy, was was towards the good. That's why it wouldn't make any sense. You would never have a desire to kill anybody. Because the desire to kill somebody stems from the fact that you're envious of him. Because why? Because you're fixating on the wrong goal. Because you're fixating on the right goal, so you can tell me the Chambar and Shalom Ba'olam. The love of Chachma, the love of truth, increases peace. Because then you don't have this aggressive thing. So all of your aggressive energy is being directed towards the study of the universe, the sublimating, in the sublimated form. Aggression is based upon aggression itself. In the sense that you're referring to, he couldn't relate to it. If we had a whole system regulating the aggression of man, we wouldn't understand it. Because aggression itself stems from the fact that you're fixating on physical goals, on the physical of the good. That's what it stems from. So therefore you're envious of the other guy. That's why the very next story, Cain and Hevel, is already, they have that clash between people. That's after the faith. But that he wouldn't have had. He wouldn't have understood this.
But Adam decides.
In other words, we could say that Adam, as he existed before the faith, did not have a conflict between two inclinations, between two yitzhaks. He only had he did have a yitzhak hara. He did have a yitzhak hara. But the way it was designed, it didn't mean he was in a constant state of conflict, but it was in Kut. So he was a harmonious type of a creature. And that harmony was destroyed when he changed the term of his existence. You're getting down to the why. God's wisdom determined that man should, that there should be one being in this universe who has the capacity to relate to God and do the good as a result of his own choice. That he should be the cause of his goodness. Why is God's will? You can't do it. You can never ask the question on why that is the will of God, because we can never understand God, so therefore we don't know. That's what the Rambam says. I mean, all these types of questions boil down to the will of God, or the will of God, or the wisdom of God. But you can't go any further than that. Well, change was clearly, I mean, that's what the Rambam is to question. You have to go back to the beginning. But the Yetzer, it was sufficient for man to utilize his reason.
Yetzer wasn't overpowered.
The Yetzer Hara would not overpower him. Reason was a sufficient force in man to control the Yetzer Hara, given the fact that the energy was basically directed towards the good. So man did have to control his Yetzer Hara. That's true. By definition, man has the Yetzer Hara and has to control it. That's the definition of the being. But the force in man which did that, which controlled it, was the reason, was the seichel. There was no need for a conscience. Because the chayter was no need for a conscience. But because he was overpowered. Right, because man, as a result of his zechir, sinned. So you see that man had the capacity for sin. And this was a sin. Since the story of the sin, it meant that he had free will and he had the capacity. He had the capacity to do either of the two. That is clear. He had the capacity to not eat from the... you see what God confronts him. What did he do? Therefore, clearly, he had the capacity to refuse chava. And he can't do it. He also had the capacity to give in. And that's it. That's the story. So Kenny is asking a question. With the first seaway, was there a system of punishment? Was he threatened? Or was that... That's a good question. Or was he supposed to obey purely in terms of his seichel? His seichel. His knowledge that since God is a source, it is the correct thing to do to follow the will of God. That's what they're asking. Was Adam expected to follow purely on the basis of love of God, or did he have also the additional incentive of punishment? And you're right. Now, we're not saying that he felt shame because of the Avera. The shame over here is an instinctive phenomenon. And it had to, and it's because of the nakedness. The Pasuk points that out. And the Rambam says a new faculty has come into being. So it doesn't mention anything. In fact, whether he felt shame of the Avera, I could prove to you, it would appear that he did not, because at this point in time, there's no indication that he took the blame. You see that when God confronts him, he says, "Aisha shanasati umari," the woman. He blames it on the woman, and indirectly blames it on God. So it's not even clear that he acknowledges that he has done anything wrong. Right? And this is afterwards. So the immediate shame is not because of the realization that he had done the wrong thing. It's rather because of what the Rambam has said, that a new faculty came to him. I think Baal Peshach said, not to do things that are very disgusting. Even from disgusting, not from the garbage, so to speak. A straw that would be used for drawing blood. Doing things that people would find disgusting is a prohibition in the Torah. The question is why? And this person, the answer is because you're breaking down certain categories which are essential, that are necessary to protect us. So these types of feelings of disgust and shame and so forth are necessary to man. So you shouldn't try to... they can't be uprooted like anything else. Since man has the power to condition himself. So a person can condition himself, to be immune to just about anything. So the same thing is true with violence too. A person can condition himself. So therefore I would say that it's not good to have a nudist society, or nudism is wrong, because it's the going against the natural emotion of shame. And that's good, that man should have it. That doesn't mean, of course, like anything else, it's got to be in the proper limit. But for any emotion, if it goes too far, so then a person has too much guilt and shame and so forth, he can't function properly and do those activities which are legitimate. Fine. But that doesn't... But like the Rambam says, everything has to be in line with the Shvila Zahav.
It's funny.
The point said that clothing is very... You see, clothing is very important. You see, naked people don't get too far in the fight. What we were saying last time was that it says that Vayasam Kostras Or, that God made for them a leather garment by Albishem and clothed them. So it meant that
even though they had taken the fig leaves, he said. It seemed unnecessary. But we said that it wasn't a functional cleansing. The fig leaves is essentially functional, just to cover the nakedness. But man requires something more than that. Now that he's in his new situation, the new structure of his psyche demands that he be a being who wears clothing as part of his image, as part of his psychological necessity, part of his dignity, is that he wears clothing. And that's expressed by, and in other words, it's also put, so in a sense, it's a part of the creation. It's an outgrowth of the factor of shame, that man now has to function in an entirely different way, and the phenomenon of clothing comes into being as a psychological necessity. Okay, so now we're on Pasuk Yud Beis. Actually, the question, Vayomer, when you're out, Vayomer Mihi Yilacha, and God said, who told you that you are naked? Kiera Mata. Hamina Eit, Hashem Tzivi Sicha, Zavilti Achol Mimeo, Acholta. Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from? Okay. Let's analyze this pasuk for a second. What does it mean? What does it mean, who told you? Yihilcha, who told you that you're naked? In Yud, it says, he answered him, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid, for I was naked, and I hid. So that's what, this is a response to that. Who told you that you're naked? What does that mean, who told you? The expression told is a little bit strange, too. Right? That's a little bit different. What is intended by that question? Who told you?
I mean,
so is there a redundancy over here? It's like a interrogation. Who told you? But then God continues. God doesn't wait for an answer at that point. Who told you that you are naked? Have you eaten? Have you eaten from the tree? Well, apparently that's the
rhetorical.
Yes, it would seem from that's a rhetorical question. In other words, well, of course God knows. That is, the knowledge of nakedness, which stems from the fact that he's been changed, is because of the prohibition, because he ate from the tree. Because God then goes on, God doesn't wait for an answer at this point. He continues, oh, did you eat from the tree? Okay? So, let me just put it in this sense. Mihigilacha, I would translate what caused this to come about. Not, in other words, you know now that you have a certain knowledge that you didn't have before. Right? So, in other words, it's sort of like normally it's a type of knowledge. Okay? The knowledge of good and evil. The knowledge that you're naked. You didn't have this awareness. You didn't have this awareness. It wasn't part of your psyche before. It didn't mean anything to you. Now suddenly it means something to you. So now you know that you're naked. That's basically what he's saying. I know that I'm naked. I can't, that's why I'm hiding. And beforehand you didn't have that problem. So now you've acquired some new knowledge. Okay? Now normally, that if you're going to express it that way, you can express it indirectly, euphemistically, as who communicated. Where did you get this knowledge from? That's the intent of Mihigilacha. Where did you get this information from? Where did you get this knowledge from? It's a euphemistic way of questioning him, of setting him up to see, well, what's the purpose? Well, let's now, that being the case, what's the entire purpose of Pasuk Yud Aleph? What's the objective of it? You can't, of course you can ask the question, God knows. So why is God even asking him? But obviously, there's a purpose. What's the purpose of Yud Aleph? Say there's a garden. There's nothing that can't be taken back. Can't be taken back. But there's another avenue. And that is tshuva. And what is the first component in tshuva? He's setting him up. This is really, again, Hashem Elokim. This is really compassion. This whole intervention has to be seen as a compassionate suggestion towards man. Yeah, so what's his, Eric? What's the first thing? What? Yeah. How do you react to this? In terms of how does it affect you? As long as the person has the capacity to look at himself objectively and truthfully and to acknowledge the deed, then he can embark on the road to truth. So the first, that's the first thing. Yeah, a kar sachet. So God is setting him up for this. In other words, on his own he wouldn't do this necessarily. On his own he wouldn't do it. So now the two flow together. In other words, mihi yilecha is an introduction to part two. Mihi yilecha is bringing to his attention the fact that you know, you did something. You did something. Something occurred. It's interesting. I mean, I'm just giving a little bit of speculation over here, because it's followed. The second part, I mean, I ate from the, you know, the leaf from the tree, is like there you have the accusation. It's pinpointing specifically, putting on the spot. So it's an accusation. But mihigi lecha is sort of an introduction to that. You see? It doesn't, in other words, it's not an accusation, but it's an introduction to the accusation. It's setting him up. Correct? In other words, it's setting him up so that it, a person has to be in the proper frame of mind. I mean, you learn things from this. A person has to be in the proper frame of mind to receive information. You want to help a person. You want to help a person. You have to, it's not enough. A lot of times people, you know, when somebody else is doing the wrong thing, so they want to, they supposedly want to help them, so they, but they don't achieve the objective. Because they don't stop to analyze the best way to convey the information. There's many reasons for that. But mihigi lecha, I would say, I mean, I'll give you a chance to express your opinions, but mihigi lecha is the setup. It's setting him up for the next phase. That something has occurred over here. A change, a negative change has occurred in the fact that you now have this new knowledge. And who told you? So who, that's a milder, it's easier for a person to take that. When you're expressing it euphemistically, it's easier for a person to deal with it. It's more of it. It's as though you receive knowledge, so where do you get it? Where do you get this knowledge from? It's not that accusatory.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So it puts the person in a certain frame of mind. You can't shock a person. A person can relate, certain realities are very painful for a person to relate to. So you always have to bear that in mind, that when you're going to try and get a person to deal with certain things that might be painful for them to deal with, you have to use your seichel. And how to broach the issue, how to set him up, and so on and so forth. You just go plunge, if you just start accusing the person, so the natural reaction is defense. So perhaps there's a progression over here. The essence of the pasuk is to set up an opportunity for him to begin the road to tshuva. The road to tshuva would be hakar sachet, the recognition of the sin. And therefore God stating it openly. Did you eat from the tree? But before that, there's an introduction of mihigi lecha to bring him into that framework, into a certain framework where he would be prepared to hear it. In other words, God did not go directly. if I was going to analyze the pasuk now, and so you know, in terms of a workbook, breaking it down, you know, for methodology, I would say, what's the proper question? What's difficult about the pasuk? Now that we've analyzed the pasuk, we can go back and look, what is the difficulty in the pasuk? My question is B, it's very good. That I noticed redundancy, and of the two, the statement seems to be repetitive. Who told you that you are naked? It means, what is the cause of this knowledge? Which is what? We know it's just the fact you ate from the tree. And did you eat from the tree? And it seems to be repetitive. And of the two, I would get a record of horse. the question should get right to the point. And what is the point? Have you eaten from the tree? That's the main question. So therefore, the question is, why? What is the necessity of Mihigid Lachal? Who told you that? And we've answered it because it's impossible. If it is impossible, or it's very, in this case, clearly it would have been, but in general, if the lesson is that you have to prepare a person to receive certain ideas, to receive certain truths. And if you don't go through that preparation, man, in other words, in dealing with man, if you're communicating with man, you can't just take into consideration that it's logical. You have to understand how the emotions are going to affect. And that sort of paves the way. Mihigil Lecha is paving the way. So whether or not Adam did respond properly, did do tshuva or did not, did acknowledge or didn't acknowledge, cannot be utilized as a litmus test. Because of the fact that this is something which lies within the framework of man's bechira. So any method you use, the justification has to be in terms of the whether it's proper understanding of the human psyche. But it can't, the fact that it failed doesn't mean that it was the wrong method. It does not mean it was the wrong method. It just meant that this person was incapable of doing tshuva. So Kenny is asking if that is the case. If we're saying that results per se cannot be not the barometer, so how do you know? In general, you're asking, right?
Exactly.
In general, how do we know? In other words, you take my point to the extreme, it's going to sound absurd. So I'll always be able to justify any failure. I'll say yes. It seems it was the best method, but something wrong with this person. And if doctors would use that excuse, how come the patient died? Well, that's his problem. He's not a good patient. My medicine was perfect. It's not my fault that he's not a good patient. Right? So I don't think we would accept that, correct? Okay, so let's see if we can clarify. Let's see, when do we say that it's not a litmus test, and where do we draw the line, so to speak? That's what you want, right? Yeah. I don't think I can establish any kind of a formula. There are certain things where, basically, how do you learn it? You learn about them through trial and error. A lot of medicine and so on and so forth is learning, you learn what works through trial and error. So you have to analyze it after the fact, if you can. But in general, in certain areas, it's impossible for a human being to have, we don't have this total. You have to use, when we're talking about using the best method, the best, insofar as, we can see it with our limited capacity. But, if that's the case, if you study the matter carefully, and this is what the method you're using is the one which would be endorsed by Chacham in terms of logic and so on and so forth, and you see that it fails. Given general, in other words, there's reasons. You have to have a plan, and the plan that you decide upon has to be based upon the factors, and it has to make sense, and it's rational, and so forth. So then you go ahead with the plan. You acted correctly. Now it could be that it could be it was the correct thing to do, and this person simply. We're talking about an area where we're not talking about something like medicine. We're talking about an area where the person, whether it succeeds or not, is up to that person's bechira. You see? So one possibility is that you acted correctly. You did what you had to do. Now it's his choice. He chose. It was a matter of his bechira. See? And it's also possible that had you used a different method, it is possible. It's always possible to say that had you used a different method, that he might have acted differently. Yeah, but then the question is, since you're limited, maybe that piece of information could have been beyond your scope, you see. Yes. Right, that's what we discussed. You see from this clearly that this was the proper approach to use, and it did not... didn't succeed because he didn't do tshuva. He did not do tshuva, and well, okay. Yeah, well, I don't know if that's I'm sorry?
Chazal says, so to speak, the whole experiment, I wouldn't call it an experiment, I don't know if you want to use that word, but the whole experience of Gan Eden would seem failed. But that's true. In fact, you go even further. When we did come to Noah, right, that it says that God regretted, so to speak, he created the man. The plan was to destroy it. And then the Noah Motachem. But Noah found favor. And the implication being, had it not been for the fact that there was Noah, then everything would have been destroyed. Now, how is that possible? Doesn't that contradict Rashi? How could it be that God will destroy his own creation? Well, that's because, yes, it can be. It's still, the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuvah that God is always judging the world. If the majority of mankind, the sins outweigh the merits, and of course only God knows how to weigh them and so forth. But the concept is there, and that is that God will destroy the world. And he brings a raya from the model, from the book. So that would not, if that were to occur, if mankind were, if there were no Noah, all of mankind would be completely corrupted, such that their existence would have no purpose. So their existence would be terminated. But you say, well, one second, it was God's creation, is this a failure? And the answer would be, no, because once you posit that there is a phenomenon of free will, so it therefore inevitably must include the possibility that man will choose incorrectly. And if so, he has the capacity to alter the state of his existence. Okay. Vayomer Adam, and the man said, Ha'isha asher nasati imadi, the woman that you placed there with me, he nasna li mihaet va'ochel. She gave me from the tree, and I ate. It sounds like a news report more than an answer. Where's the answer? And besides, all God asked him was,
did you eat from the tree?
Did you eat or didn't you? God didn't ask him who gave you. Who the waitress was. But what are the most interesting words in this book? Catch your attention. Basically saying, as you all think.
He's
not denying. It's interesting. He's not denying that he ate it. And I don't know, is he making the claim? What's he saying? We have to look trying to find. What's his answer? I mean, he's not. He has an intention over here. He's not denying that he ate it. And is he saying that it's mutter, if somebody, it was only prohibited if I took it myself, and now that it was given to me, I didn't realize that. He doesn't mean that.
He
he's implying that due to the fact that she gave it was okay to eat, it was
no,
only... Every nuance is one thing. It's bad enough to mention the fact that she gave it to me. But that would have been one thing if he'd have said, Ha'isha nasata, excuse me, Ha'isha nasnali minayei v'ochel. Alright? That would have been bad enough. You see, again, there's two ideas that he's saying. One is that the woman gave it to him. But he adds also another element. Hashem, that you placed there with me, which is gratuitous. This is an argument. He's arguing with God. It seems to be that he's arguing with God. This is that's the most interesting part of this whole thing. That's more significant than the mere fact that he blames the woman. But he has to bring in the fact that you placed here with me, implying things would have been so much better had you not placed here with me. Let me ask you a question, which I've raised before. They both, in the end, they both committed the same okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Was it, if you were to analyze now, even though the physical act was the same, but the motivation behind it is clearly, the essence of the chet, differentiate. Two people could do the same thing, but could have two different implications. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, stealing, same two thieves in the same gang, in the same theft. One could be doing it for the actual indulgence, which is a motivating factor. The other one could be doing it because he wants to give his kid a college education or whatever. And it's totally, it's wrong. I'm not justifying. I'm just saying that the different act, the character of the act,
is different. One can, you know, stem from greed, it can stem from insecurity, whatever the case may be. Now I'm asking, in this situation, they both did the same thing. Was the identical causation? Just that in his case, he was more passive. He needed the stimulation that she gave him, you know.
Well,
was it an entirely different, we would say, mais avere? It's kind of a different thing. Even though it was the same physical thing. But this question, I mean, you have to bring in what was her motivation? It said as soon as she ate from it, because she ate from the tree, she gave a tikkun. Right? What does the puzzle say? It says batochal, but tikkun inferior batochal, this is above, it's six. She took from the fruit and she ate. But tikkun gam leisha ima bayochal. And she gave also to her man with her, and he ate. That was sort of an instinctive reaction. As soon as she had eaten, she gave it to him. And you have to have a wife. Why'd she give it to him? Now, what Ben is saying is, in this case, clearly, that's an instinctive reaction that she realized that as a result of the fact that she had committed the avera, she was on a lower level. Immediately. So nobody feels good after a sin. A sin doesn't make you feel good. You don't have to feel good because you, the person has a certain sense of self-esteem. They want to do the good, like the Rambam said. Each person wants to do the good thing. But he has the instinct. He's in a state of conflict. And when he gives into the instinct and the mind, that's basically what it is. The mind is overpowered by the force of instinct. He doesn't feel good about himself. And she realized there was a serious change over the years. And she did not want to lose, love of Adam, the relationship with Adam, and in order to maintain it, he had to be on the same level. Otherwise he would have not been able to live it. She was afraid that if he remained on the high plane that he was on before the phase, and now she's on this level, then that's it. So she gave it to him. Now, I would say that his answer is his defense. His defense, I don't think he means at all. I mean, he's a very, very intelligent individual. He's on a very high level. He has a vua. So I don't think he means to say, well, I mean, I didn't go and take it myself. I just, you know, that passively it's okay. He meant, I believe, that the problem was the emotional desire, the need to please the woman. That's what the cause. In other words, I really didn't want to eat from the thing itself, which I believe is true. The things were different. Her sin was she could not overcome the imagination, the lure, the allure. It says she sort of the tree was an allure. It became alluring to her. She couldn't overcome the very emotion of for the fruit itself. That's not what he was able to. That was not a problem for him. But he couldn't overcome the need to get her approval. In other words, when she gave it to him, there was that implicit message that she'd be very upset if he wouldn't eat from it. But she wanted him, it was very important to her, and that's where he came in, apparently. And that's what his answer is, that I didn't really violate the command inherently. I gave in to her. And therefore he's sort of like, actually shifting the blame, and now it puts in Hashem Asate, by creating this type of being and putting me in this situation, so this is what's responsible. Of course it's not an acknowledgement, it's not Shuvah. The answer is it shouldn't be given in. There's no justification that he's wrong. But I believe that's the type of idea that he defends. The extenuating, and the circumstances were the woman. And therefore he's blaming it on God. Which Rashi said, Chazal said that he was a kafli tov. This letter, in other words, when a person sins, you see how
the whole framework of sin is that it causes a distortion of the person's understanding of reality. And his relationship to God will always be affected, unless he's the kind of person that can be treated, that can admit. If he can't admit that he's wrong, if he can't acknowledge faith, so he's going to have to, he can't blame himself. To blame the cause is always going to be outside of himself. So therefore, there's something wrong with the situation. And ultimately, who's responsible for the situation is God. So it's going to affect his relationship to God. That's why Chazal mentioned that he was a kafir tov. Because God had done this for his benefit. The truth was, it was for his benefit. Because it was low toned, it was not good for the man to be alone. And he needed an Ezer Kenegdo, and this was the best possible situation for him. Provided, of course, you see, there's no good for man. There's no good, again, when God does a good for man, there's no such thing as an automatic, magical type of good where you just sit back and it becomes good for you. Man. God provides you with the elements that you need, but if you don't utilize it properly, so then there's not whatever it is. And that's why there's a whole thing, if you read Sefer Devarim, all the warnings about them and coming to the land of Israel. I mean, it's side by side, you have descriptions as to what a good land it is, it's a good land, and you're going to come into a perfect situation. You only have to build it up. It's already built up for you. How is this filled with all that? And then warning that lest you eat and be satiated, they'll be satisfied and they'll rebel. And Rashi says, because the person only that rebels because of his abundance, because of satiation, Rashi says.
If you serve between fat and thick.
Yeah. So, why? Because every blessing has the potential for rebellion. So it's not, there's no, but God is giving them a good thing. Yeah, a good thing depends upon how you relate to it. But there's no such thing as an automatic good. Yeah, the Pasuk in Eicha, I don't know if I have it exact. Mipi Hashem. Mipi Elyon. Mipi Elyon. Or Yesei Atov. Harav Yatov. Yeah, in other words, God, everything occurs as a result of our own, our own choice. That's how to relate. But what does it mean? Let's take Tov. And God bestows good on us, that's why we pray and so forth. It means that God gives us the opportunity. But if we don't transform it into a Tov, then it's not. There's no such thing as a Tov by nature, because that's the nature of Adam. So there was a distinction between the character of the faith, even though they both did the same action, in terms of the motivation. And we said that the motivation of Tava, as Pasuk says, she saw the tree was desirous, nechmad, and so forth. She was overpowered by the imagination. It seems, however, that Adam himself was able to control the desire for the eight, Adah, but he only did it because of the woman. That's what he says when God confronts him. Ha'isha Hashem asati imadi. Which means that the way we really analyze it, it's not a justification. It doesn't explain it, but in the manner in which he says it, so what? That's just the way he received the fruits. He gave it to him. So what? It's not the question. The question is, why did you eat it? So the answer is because he had a certain relationship with the woman, and he gave into that emotional need to please her. That's basically the pshat. Now you see in the psukim later on confirmation of this. Leisha Ima is good. Indicates that her reason in giving it to him was so that she shouldn't lose him, because she recognized that she wouldn't be on the same level anymore. After chet, the person is not on the same level that they were on before, and she understood very well that that's the part of her relationship. The person at a higher level is not going to want to relate to somebody in a lower level. So she realized that after the chet, if she had sinned and he hadn't, then they'd be on two different levels.
Did she know that?
It would seem that way. Yeah. Ima.
Purposely, yeah. Well, it has to be that way. It has to be that way. Again, very well said. Rashi says that's the reason. That she shouldn't die and he would live and marry somebody else. And that's the basic idea. That's the basic idea. That was the fear of losing him. That's what Rashi is communicating to us. So that's what happens when a person sins, and it means to say they're overpowered by their emotions, and it's not just that particular one. Avera. I mean, a perfect example. A perfect example in this story of Avera, Gorera, Avera. That they sin, one sin draws after it another sin. That's good. I mean, Max gives a good question. Max has a very good question on the Rashi. That's the kasha that you should ask on Rashi. Because according to Rashi, it doesn't make sense. You can analyze it to something that doesn't make sense over here. According to Rashi, her concern was that she would die, right? And he would marry somebody else. So what's the solution to that? Just give it to him and he'll die too. So according to Rashi, Rashi is accusing her of... that's a very irrational type of a thing. In other words, what's the solution? We should both die? It's difficult, right? It's very difficult. It's not putting her on a high level. It's not being very kind to her. To attribute those types of thoughts and emotions to her is very critical. What would you think of such a person, you know, that would have done something like that? A person did something which would bring death down upon themselves. And they can't tolerate the idea that they're going to die and their husband or their wife, whatever, you know. So they should die too.
Why
you take Rashi literally, what Rashi's saying is if she hadn't given it to him, then she would die and he would live and he'd find somebody, he'd marry somebody else. Mm-hmm. You mean there must have been other women? Well, you're going into too many details already. Too many particulars. They're trying to communicate an idea. You have to understand, I don't know if it's necessary to take it that literally. That's the point of this whole thing. I don't think she sat down and worked out all these calculations. It means to say, what is it? Also, once she had eaten from it, so she saw that she didn't die, right? So then what's the concern? Anyways, so clearly, it doesn't mean it in that way. The idea that they will die, you can say. I mean, Parshim say that it means that had they not eaten from the fruit, then death would not have come into it. They would not have needed to die, so to speak. In other words, man could have lived continuously without death, and death now becomes a necessity. Now death becomes a necessity in terms of human perfection, in terms of the perfection of the soul. In other words, given the new type of the situation, the effect that the chet had upon the psyche, and that man is now more involved in the instinctual, so the degree of perfection that the soul can attain in separating itself from the physical, in terms of its closeness to God, in terms of its knowledge of God, is limited. And that's what the Rambam says, that the ultimate reward is Olam Haba. And Olam Haba is the state where the soul exists separate from the body. And the ultimate, we can't even imagine the nature of the good of Olam Haba. We know it's superior, and it's basically because the tzaddikim exist there, and they perceive the knowledge of God. That is that's something you can't relate to, you can't imagine how it's going to be like, but that's the description. In a manner that they could never attain in this world because of the limitation of the physical. So death becomes a necessity. However, had they not sinned in the original state, when all the energy of man was directed towards the good, and the Yetzer was Nukhut, was an external phenomenon, required an external stimulus, so then the perfection that was designed for man could have been attained in this world, in the physical existence, and that would not have been necessary. If you yom achochal in man, on the day that you eat from it, you will change your whole nature, and then death will come to me. That doesn't really explain the Rashi so well either, because the way the Rashi is talking where Rashi is talking, it's a little bit difficult because it seems to be expressing a real fear of losing him through death. And so then you're going to have to take it the way we took it before. You're going to be caught in a bit of a contradiction, a mamonisha. Okay? Because is she afraid of immediate death? Are you going to maintain that the death will be immediate, not that death will come into being, but it'll be immediate as a punishment. If you're going to look at it that way, that the death will come as a punishment, and so then it's very difficult. So why did she eat in the first place, knowing that? Okay. I'll get to the second. And you can go back and analyze this Rashi more fully. I hadn't intended to deal with this particular Rashi, but the idea of the Rashi clearly, according to the plain meaning of the Pshat, her giving it, and you see from the story itself, her giving it to Adam was imah, as Max pointed out, was not to lose him. That's the clear idea. And that's the way, that's the important lesson that you learn from this. The important lesson you learn from this is that when a person commits an avera, it has many consequences. It has many consequences. And it's never just a matter involving yourself. It'll always affect your relationship to God. It'll also affect your relationship to other people. Because now you can't tolerate the idea that you're in a lower level than others. So it's going to have an effect upon those to whom you're close. Right? That's the idea. Because that fear will always be there. Rav Moshe makes the observation that the new state, that is, as we said, the creation of the conscience, the due to the factor of shame, that consequence, which is expressed in the fact that they knew that they were naked, does not come into being until after Adam sins. In other words, she eats from the Vatigach Mipiri Vatochal. She took from the fruit and she ate, and she gave it to a man, and he ate. And then it says, Vatifakachna Ene Shnehem. The eyes of both were opened. It would appear that occurs simultaneously. That's the way it would appear. That is to say that the change in Chava did not take place until after Adam had sinned as well. That's the implication. And of course you were asking a question, like, why should that be? I assume you're asking a question. Right? That's problematical, because why, or the other side of the coin, what Moshe's asking is, suppose he would have refused. Because Adam had Bechira, he didn't have to. Suppose he would have refused, what would have happened at that point? That's a good question. Good question. Okay, we're dealing with a question. We're going along with Moshe's assumption, which seems to be indicated by the Pesukim, that the consequences of the chait occurred simultaneously in the woman and in the man. Okay, which means that it would seem, therefore, that until Adam hadn't eaten from the fruit, Chava had not suffered the effect. But once he did, then she did. And that's difficult, because each person should have been judged separately, and she should have felt the consequences immediately. In other words, she should have been ashamed as a result of her fate. Then she gets to him, and either you could say that that's the way it occurred, but the pasuk you're just describing it, you know.
We don't
know what's later, but it's immediate. No, it's immediate. But it's immediate. By Yochal, but Tipakachne Ene Shneim. It's immediate. It's immediate. It's immediate. All this takes place immediately. There's no reason to assume it takes place later on. I don't know why should we make such an assumption? There's no reason to go away from the plain shot.
It
wasn't a natural process, as we said, because God created the Rambam. So God created a new faculty, which they didn't have before. They didn't have this faculty of conscience. He just had the rational faculty. It went through that in the Rambam. It learned. Assuming that that's correct, that it's not just a descriptive phenomenon, and the deduction is well placed, the question then is, why? Why should it be this way? That's the question we're trying to focus on.
I would say like this. The deduction I would make, if this is correct, if we're correct now, if this is the actual situation. That the eyes of both of them simultaneously became open. And I think it makes a lot of sense. The pshat would be that the gzeirah of God, this gzeirah, that there has to be a change in the nature of man in order to save him. By the creation of a new faculty and all the consequences, the Tzar Din was against the min ha'adam, against the human species, and was essentially Adam represented the human species. He was created in order to achieve the purpose of man. And Chavu was brought into being to assist him in that endeavor. So she's in a sense secondary, tafel, feilala. Now, in other words, the way we have to understand it is that God gave man the choice. He gave him an opportunity to exist in two different ways. To exist in the manner which was intended for him in the Gan Eden, pre-Bechet, that was a higher level of existence, or to exist in the manner in which he exists now, after the Chet. That was totally in his Bechira. And as long as he would not have violated that, he would have had the existence of Gan Eden. You see? So then, that's the pshat, everything fits in. That she knew that he would continue to exist. Because the human species, and the fact is, she may have sinned, but the essence of the human species would not be deserved, because Adam was the essence. It was his task to be engaged in the study of the Chachmas Hashem and so forth. He would have been okay. So, but she wouldn't have been okay. She might have been eliminated. She would have to answer for it, and God would provide him with another Ezer connector. But there would not have been ground to change the terms of existence. It's only when he succumbed to that, you see, there were two elements. Man, in order to sustain himself in the state of Gan Eden, had to control his tivus in two different ways. As we said yesterday, there were two different instincts that had to be controlled. One was the instinctual desire, the imagination, the desires in the imagination that the allure, that come from the allure, the attraction to what we call taiva, that was represented by the tree. And then there was a new emotion that had to be controlled due to the fact that the social situation had been created. Once a woman is created, there's another that you have to control, your need to do things in order to please the other person. That's a very powerful, the social emotion. That's what brings most people base their lives on that. They have to be in more, there's more crime is committed, more hate is committed because of the second thing. The need to be in conformity with others, the need to maintain a certain lifestyle. It's not because they really need the thing itself, it's rather they need to please somebody and so forth. Those are the two things. Had Adam not eaten from the fruit, so then that would mean that he was able to sustain himself. He would have passed the test. A, he didn't give in to the taiva for the thing itself. B, he didn't give in to the taiva to please the chav, to please the woman. He failed on the second account. And that was when the Gzar Din, then Adam required, Adam had failed the test. And then there was a requirement for a new situation. And that then, the Gzar Din was chal on both of them at the same time. That's a very good point. That's what Rashi says. That's exactly what Rashi is telling us. That she understood that if he didn't sin, then he would retain himself. There'd be no relationship between them anymore. She would be unfit. She would be unfit to be with him. And so she understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would provide another helper. And he'd marry somebody else. I'm sorry. What we could say is that the chait was not nigmar. It seems to be one continuous chait. It's not two separate chatoyim, but it's one continuous chait. Because as you said, Don, you were on the track before. But these two individuals, they represent mankind at this point. And the chait is not complete until Adam eats. When Adam eats, then the chait is complete. Then Adam proves himself unworthy of the previous state of existence, and now the
decree from heaven comes forth, and that's why the punishment is experienced simultaneously. The feeling of shame, as we know, is an expression of the punishment. Now the Rashi says clearly, at that point in time, when she had sinned and he hadn't, it meant that mankind per se had not been brought down to that. She was now not on a par with mankind. She's now not on a par with mankind because man.
It's the word man.
Yeah. So therefore, she had this fear that she'd be out of the picture. She had proved herself unworthy. Whatever punishments would accrue to her, but she would not be together with him anymore. And because he would continue on his and then something, God would have to do something about it because she was unfit for him, and he would. But the implication, I think, is very good. Aaron is making a very good point. If you see, once we have the breakthrough, you now go through back to the psukim, everything begins to take on a new meaning. He's pointing out, excellent point in Pasuk Hey, that the Nachash in addressing Chava, saying Ki Yodea Elokim Ki V'yom Achalcha Mimenu, it's the plural, V'nifkechu Einechem V'yisem Ekelokim Yodei Tov Vara. It's all in the plural, which indicates that this will occur, these changes will occur when both of you. But if it's just her alone, and not him, then the original situation stands. Then mankind has passed the test. So it works out nicely. What we started out with that the character of the faith is different. Is to be seen in God, when God addresses the various participants. Adam Amar. Well, the Adam Amar, and to Adam he said, Kishamata Lakolishta. That's the indictment. That's the chait. The chait was not eating the fruit per se, but Kishamata Lakolishta. You listen, you were overcome by a different emotion. And that's, I think, in a person's battle for perfection, this is the more prevalent one. Why it's very important who you associate with. Who your friends are. Kishamata lakol ishtecha. Many people are capable of overcoming their own, the inner drives and emotions. They can control themselves, but they can't control kishamata lakol ishtecha. There's a certain seduction because they have this need to please the other individual. I mean, we'll discuss it at length perhaps some other time, and that distorts. They have this, it could stem from insecurity, a fear that what will this person think of me? And they can't tolerate that idea, and they do things which they otherwise would not do. The implication is that if she had not been there, she had not given, he would not have eaten. So he distorted, his reason was distorted because of his relationship to the woman. Then, those two elements go together. It doesn't mean to say that you're entirely innocent of eating from this. There are two chatzayim, in other words. There are two sins. One is kishamat l'kol ishtecha, and the other one is and because of that. Now you don't think. Don't think as your taina is not valid. Your taina is you really didn't. I really don't care about the taiva. I didn't do it for me. I did it. Therefore, it's not an act of taiva. See, a person deludes himself. I really have to. People will give that to defense. They did something, but they did a deal. They did something illegal, whatever. So it's not because I wasn't after the money. I don't need it. I did it for somebody, for that other person. That other person pressured. I was under tremendous pressure, but I did it for that. Now, that is true. You gave it to the pressure, but having done so, you don't deny the fact that you also see this weakened your resolve. This weakened your resistance against the desire for the thing itself. You suffer the consequences. You suffer the consequences of eating the fruit as well. The essence of your chait was kishamat l'kol ishtecha, but as a result of that, you suffer because you ate from the fruit. Don't deny that you ate from the fruit. You also had taiva. You gave into your taiva. Maybe a different factor which brought you into it. You see?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we'll do the onshin, the punishment.
You're right.
I would say also, I'm just tossing it out. We'll think about it, and that is to say that. Had he had complete control over the tiber, these did not partake
he had it under total wrap, under control, then he would, maybe he would not listen. It wasn't just. See? It wasn't just. It was, what we say, multi-determined. It was multi-determined. But part of the determination, he also gave in to Titus. You see what I'm saying? Her chait was that she gave in to Titus. You see that from her answer. Hanachosh hishiyani v'ochet. You see? That's not, that's trying to explain why she gave in to Taiva. Adam primarily was brought into it because of the woman, but that doesn't mean that his chait did not partake of that element, I'm giving in to Taiva. It did, but talk on that. Had you not had a weakness in the area, had you been strong in the area of the control over the Taiva, then you wouldn't have given to your...
For the first.
Don't fool yourself. He was in a state of denial or distortion, whatever you might say. His answer indicated that that was not an answer of tshuva. That was not a karas achet, as he said. Okay, we already explained the response of Adam, where we said that it seems as though he was trying to dodge the issue because he didn't accept the blame. It's not clear how you define it today. In other words, he did acknowledge that he had done it. Maybe he accepted the responsibility, but not the blame. I don't know. He did admit that he ate it, but Haisha, by including the idea that the woman gave it to him, there's no right. There's not seem to be charata. It seems not, because you can't have charata until you have hakaras achet, until you have acceptance of the fact that you sinned. So, acceptance of the fact that you sinned would have to mean to the exclusion of all separate factors. Let's say, in other words, you learn from this. A true confession really is not for the sake of confessing. Confessing is for the sake of acknowledging. That's I've given a lot of questions on tshuva, and I said that to me that's the most difficult part of tshuva is the acknowledgement, because even when people do accept, we find that today, when there's so much corruption, more so than in the past, of politicians that have to come up with the art of they can't ignore it anymore. In the past it was just deny it; it was easier to deny. But now society has such investigative reporting and probing and so forth, they catch them with the good. So they've had to come up with a new technique, and that is the modern type of confession, where a person sort of acknowledges that he did it, but then brings in all the, with extenuating circumstances, guilty with an explanation, is basically what we're talking about. Okay? Guilty with an explanation. And that really, in terms of true tshuva, that wouldn't be considered... that would not be considered acknowledgement, because the explanation, it, psychologically, the effect of the explanation is to remove the element of responsibility. You see, explanation can come in afterwards. You can plead for mercy on extenuating circumstances. That's one thing. That has a role to play for, when you judge an individual, in general, you can't judge anybody in true terms, but we have to, when you're dealing with people in situations, you have to make a decision when it comes to a matter, should you trust them, forgive them, whatever, in practical encounters. So then, you have to use the consideration of justice, but there's also room for compassion, for mercy. Even in the yeshiva, when people violate the rules and so forth, it's a question of disciplining, it's a question of throwing them out of the yeshiva, or whatever the case may be. So there's no doubt that there's room for extending, if a person fully acknowledges that he did something wrong, he doesn't want to acknowledge that he did something wrong, you can be sure it's not going to be cured. If he's guilty with explanation, with 10 explanations, you can be sure that it's not going to change. And I'm going to give you a good guideline, because you'll encounter this in all areas, whether in at the job, with partnerships in business, or husband and wife, and all these different situations where you feel that
somebody has done something wrong and it has to be dealt with. You can't ignore it. You bring it to their attention. And then they, if they refuse to accept responsibility, that's their problem. Or if, even if they accept it, but they accept responsibility but not blame, guilty with an explanation is not really that good. Guilty should be guilty. Guilty, let's forget about it. Are you guilty or not? And that's what it all boils down to. Because what are you saying? Afterwards, however, if the person has a genuine acknowledgement of the fact that they have sinned, and now it's a question of where to go from the future, so then you can take into consideration the factors. There's certainly, I'm not saying that that's not part of reality, that everybody is equal, that a person, the weight that a sin has is not necessarily equal in all cases. One person is subjected to tremendous stresses and difficulties and temptations and so forth, and the other person has no reason whatsoever. I mean, that certainly is a factor. That certainly is a factor to be brought in. But in terms of the first step, in terms of the recognition and the acknowledgement, it's not good. You see, what he said wasn't good. Isha Shena Sati Madhu. So that's a negation of the acknowledgement. You see, Chazal was mentioned. Chazal say that Cain later on sinned, and interestingly enough, at first he denied it, but then he did have tshuva. Yeah, because he said Gadol Avonim himself. My sin is too great to bear. Gadol Avonim himself. So Chazal mentioned that Adam was walking and he encountered Cain. So again, I don't know how to take this literally. And he asked him, how did he escape? He should have been, he killed someone, so he should have been killed himself. So he said, because I confessed. I said, God love on him himself. And then Adam, I don't know the exact wording of the medicine. But Adam said, well, if I'd have known it was that easy, I would have confessed also.
He'd realize it.
Well, that's always true too. People refuse to confront their own weaknesses because they, in their imagination, that's too horrible. And the truth is that that's the easier way. Most people also, if they'd have known, that when you get yourself into a mess, but there's a way out too. But the point is, they can't confront that. In their own imagination, they build up the pain of acknowledgement of tshuva, too great to bear. And so then they're forced to keep dodging and dodging, and make the situation even worse and worse. All right. But that would indicate, as far as our purposes are concerned, that would indicate that Adam's response was not tshuva. Now let's take a look at Chava. And what does she say? Then God addressed the woman and said, Mazos Asisa, what is this that you did? Vatomer, and she said, Adnacha Shishiani Vaochel. Mavi, go ahead. Uncle was his tagim, Atayoni, which means to cause me to err. That's a very interesting, fascinating idea in its own right, because what do you see, our philosophy of sin? It's not some mystical, magical phenomenon. It's a mistake. It's an error. Deceived. You were deceived into believing. So that's the real evil of a chet, is deceived. You were deceived. If a person only acts in accordance with this concept of what is good for himself, so you made a mistake in the most serious area that is of relevance to your life. What is the good for you? So she said, the snake deceived me, and I did eat. Now the question I'd like to pose is, let's compare or contrast her response to Adam. Is this also an attempt to dodge, to put the blame on somebody else? Is she no better, no worse than Adam, or would you make a distinction between the two? Again, superficially it seems to be the same type of a response, but I ask you to look at it more deeply. She omits that phrase that you placed there with me. I think it's significant. The statement of Adam, when he refers to, he doesn't just say the woman. As we said, the most damaging element in the statement is that you placed there with me. Blaming of God. She Doesn't say that. She doesn't say where the fig is. She doesn't include that in her statement. I think that's significant. Interpretation of the Radak seems to be that she's really a follow-up, right? In other words, this would answer your question, Ellie. It would seem that she was there. She heard God's statement to Adam. Because she's... In other words, it's Adar, he put the blame onto her, and she doesn't want to accept it, and she's putting the blame on the Nachash, and by implication... By implication, she's saying the same thing. She's joining him in his resistance, as they say. And it's the fault of the snake, and where does the snake come from? Well, that's the point that I made, by the way, at the beginning, that the person cannot... The person distorts realities that they can't accept that they've sinned. In one way or another, it's going to affect their relationship to God, because they're going to have to put the blame somewhere. It's going to be... They may not name God directly, but... By implication, there's something wrong with the situation. There's not something wrong with me. Those are the two possibilities. I mean, either you accept the given situation is good because it comes from God, and therefore if there's a problem, the problem is with you. Or you can't tolerate that there's a problem with you, so you're the given, you're the perfect, and there's something wrong with the external situation. That's basically the two possibilities, two choices. And what Derek is saying is that see, really, you can't explain this statement until you really have identified the snake. Now, if it's, as we have learned, like the Sforno says, that it's just a metaphor for the Yetzirah, for our own inclination, so then you have to translate it and say, my instinct deceived me. I was deceived by my instinct, and I did eat. Now, that type of a statement would not be a statement of blame, but wouldn't that be a good statement in terms of acknowledgement?
Mm-hmm.
When a person admits that they were deceived by their instincts, that's the truth, because that's the essence of chet. Chet is a situation where, you have this confrontation, this conflict between your knowledge and your emotions, and you give in to the emotions. So that sounds a lot better. In other words, the problem of Adam is that he's not accepting the blame internally. He's saying it's due to something external. But if that is the case, then I don't know that she's dodging responsibility. I don't know that I would... Well, I mean, I don't know how the Radak learns the Nachash in the first place. How he learns that whole issue. Yeah. Okay? But the way we've been learning it, in accordance with the view of the Sforno, my opinion is that this is not the same statement as Adam. And it's a description which is accurate, that she was, this is chet, she was deceived. She was deceived by her instinct. He explains his statement that the woman gave it to me, doesn't just mean physically gave it to me, it meant she pressured me. I was under pressure. That's the whole that we discussed that. That's social pressure, peer pressure. Couldn't resist. I couldn't say no. Now, you can't just say that the fact that it was present in front of him caused him to do it. No, because when God indicts him, it says because you listened to the voice of your wife. Now, where is there a voice of the wife? Of course, first of all, in the description itself, in the description of the sin, there's no implication that she spoke. Yet later on it says, because you listened to the voice of your wife. Now go back and find me, where was there a voice? What did she say? What's it talking about? Isn't that interesting? The story does not describe any conversation between them, right? Yet when God confronts him, God says, Kishamata l'kol ishtecha, because you listened to the voice of your wife. But that didn't happen. What's it talking about? What voice? Where was there a voice? That's the proper question that should be raised over there. We go back to the story and we don't see any dialogue between them. And yet he's being criticized. So you're saying that you're saying that she really did say something? That there was a dialogue and the Torah's not recording it? I disagree with you in this case. I disagree with you. It could be that way, but to me it would seem, honestly speaking, if the Torah does record the conversation between the Nachash and the woman, right? In detail, which led to her sitting, it'd be interesting to know what she said to him. I don't know that you really have to assume that. You can. But that's the point is, whether she said something or didn't say anything, when she gave it, there was an unspoken message.
Nonverbal communication.
And there was nonverbal communication. For sure, she communicated to him the idea that I'd be very unhappy if he didn't eat from me. So, either way, it's correct. Either way, it's correct. That's right. Whether there were words, or you don't need words, because people can communicate without words. And his problem was that he gave in to that communication. That's what got him beat. This also fits in when we said that the cause of her sake was the basic sake of giving in to the desire, the fantasy, you know, the imagination, the imaginary good. That's why it fits in very well with the Nachash, because the Nachash is that factoring man which brings about these fantasies, even instinctually. In other words, that's exactly what did take place, because the instinctual aroused the man, this imaginary, the idea of the imaginary good, the fantasy and so forth. It all stems from the instinctual. I mean, in your own mind, you believe it's something else. You know, you glorify the thing that you desire, and you build it up into something. But basically, it's because of the nachash. You didn't have the instinctual factor behind it. You don't see the instinctual factor, it's hidden. In your own mind, it's a beautiful idea, it's a beautiful house, and you have all kinds of... that's where art comes into the picture. But underneath it is that instinctual factor. Okay? Vayomer Hashem Elokim al Hanachash. And God said to the snake, Ki osisa zos, because you did this, Horror ata mikola behema. You are more cursed than all of the animals whom we call chayes asada, and the wild beasts of the field. Al gechoncha teilech. You'll travel, you'll move on your stomach. The achar tochal kol yimei chayecha, and you'll eat dust all the days of your life. Okay, the Ava Oshis, and I will establish a enmity between you and the woman, and between your children and your seed and her seed. He will crush you on the head, and you will, you know, you'll attack his ankle, so to speak.
To
begin with, if you're going to take it literally, that there was a snake that was talking and so forth, that has problems. It's very difficult to understand why the snake was punished. And did the snake? What kind of being was the snake? Did the snake have a free will? Did the snake do what it did because it had free will? I mean, it doesn't seem to be that way. Whatever the snake did, that's what it's supposed to. If you're going to take it like there's some kind of a real force of the snake, that was that had this capacity to speak and had for some reason wanted to get her to eat from the tree and all that, why would it be punished? It was just doing what it's supposed to do. I mean, so it's become much more difficult. It's much easier if you learn the Louis learning. But then, of course, what does it mean? Because here, the problem over here is that it appears as though we're talking about real punishments, real changes in snakes. And that is difficult to understand. But the Sforno explains it according to his own job. What does it mean? Let's just see if we can get the part one. Or Atam Mikola Behema. And what does that mean? That you are more cursed than all of the animals. What's the significance of that in terms of man? What does that mean? It's not man. It's not saying that man is more cursed. It's saying the snake is more cursed. And according to the Sforno, the snake is really the Yetzer Hara. So what we're saying is that the Yetzer Hara is more cursed than all the animals and all the wild beasts of the field. That's the statement. Now try and make some sense out of that. There is an implication that the human says more than the animals. Why are the animals cursed? Why does that idea come to picture? It says you are more cursed than all of the animals, right? And all of the wild beasts. Now in what sense are the animals cursed? Where do we all we've read until now is that God saw that it was very good. Where do we see curse coming into the picture?
Well,
there's an implication that they're also cursed, but you're more cursed. How does that, you have to explain that. That phrase has to be explained. My question, what is the idea of something being cursed? What sense does that have? What does it mean? What's a curse in this context anyway? But later on we're going to see part of the punishment is that God curses the earth, Aru Raha Dhamma, because of you. Yeah, and you're Zion. Part of the punishment upon them is that the Adama, the earth, is cursed, Bavurecha, because of you. So what does that mean? I mean, that's the sense in which I believe the term curse is being used over here. The implication of the sentence is that everybody's cursed. There's a certain curse here, I mean, in existence. Israel is a curse. The implication. And your curse is even worse. That's the implication. Right? And that doesn't make any sense to us. Unless we decipher it properly.
Yeah.
He says, well, he asked the question, in the Behem and the Sparrow, if it was cursed more than a behemoth, behemoth is a domestic animal, Michael or Koshkin, is it not, you know, how much more certainly, isn't it included? Isn't it certain that it's more cursed than the Chaya?
The Polish, we don't know.
It means over that the Chaya is more cursed than the behemoth. The implication of it is that the Chaya, because I'll ask this question, the Chaya is more cursed than the behemoth. This is a clue. Whatever the answer is, but this is a clue over here, in my opinion. I believe, if you take a look at what do you mean the earth is cursed? Well, what kind of curse? However it is, that's the way it is. It means, from the standpoint of man, curse would be impediment to fulfilling the objective. That would be a curse, and that would fit in when God, the punishment, when God makes life more difficult, it means placing impediments in our path. And that we're all searching to be in a certain state, right? Now anything which, the more difficult it is to achieve that which we need to be happy, can be termed a curse. It's a burden that you have to carry. Of course, everybody is struggling in life to always improve their situation, to make things easier, to make it more accessible, and to the extent, you know, we have it the easy today. Like the Gemara, that who is an Ashir? One who has a Beisa Kise, Samach Lushukhan. Someone has a bathroom next to his head. I mean, in a simple, I have a pshat on that. You don't have to go into deep ideas. You can understand it. If you didn't have, in the old days, the person had to leave the cup of his house and they were slumping outside and they're fine there. Then it was like a big burden. Just to take care of a simple bodily need. That's a big burden. Today, it's been removed. So you can view that as being a curse, to have to be in a situation like that, to put a person in a situation to live in that type of a society would be a curse for a person that is easy.
An obstacle.
Now, if that is the case, I would say that, see, in that sense, all the animals, no animal is living in a state of perfect harmony. They all have instincts, and every instinct creates a need, which if not satisfied will cause pain. So in order to alleviate the pain, it has to go out, like the animals too. They have to hunt, they have to confront the forces and so forth. Alright, they don't have the psychological anxiety, although animals, they also can be in a state of misery. You take an animal out of its environment, whatever, it's not just a simple thing. They're not just in a natural state of happiness all the time. They have to go hunting, they have to do things, whatever. Now, every instinctual need in that sense can be a curse. Every need that you impose, which the being in question has to bring about a change in the order of things in order to satisfy, is a curse. So before this was like the earth, before the faith, it would give forth its fruits without any difficulty. Now it's going to be a difficult battle. You have to fight, you have to study the climate, you have to change thorns and thistles. In that sense, if the I think it makes sense that in Adam, so the instinctual satisfaction per se, if you have a being with instinctual needs, so it's going to be in a state of pain. But the instinctual makeup of the animal is much easier to satisfy, less obstacles, the way it's constructed. In any way, shape, and form, it's much easier. Even in the issue of food, that's why Rashi says the behemoth is less cursed.
hay man's it easy. It's domestic, it's a cow, it's grass, it's provided for it, it doesn't have to go out there and struggle. But the animals of the wild animals have to, you know, go out there, they have to hunt, they have to, some days they have to go hungry till they find the, you know, different, they're more affected by the external situation. But, in terms of the instinctual makeup, the now, as a result of the chet, the instinctual needs of man are much, most complicated. Man's instinctual needs are much easier. And then he loves it because he's a very complicated being. An animal, give it the same food every day, it's satisfied. Basically, its instincts are in line with its hunger, its necessity. It doesn't crave all different types of enjoyment. And man, every instinct is combined with other factors. Every instinct is combined with other factors. Try feeding the person the same, just instead of like, you know, for dogs, you have dog food, which is basically composed of the essential nutritional needs. And try making a human pill, a pellet, which has all the that's the money. See, they weren't even satisfied with the money. Those are the Allah money in the anal. All we have to look forward to is the money, our eyes. In that sense, we'll explore the particulars. In that sense, it's more clear. Because your instinctual needs will encounter all kinds of difficulties. Now, as a result of this. As a result of the chayt, it's not simple anymore. It's much more complex. It's more complex than any other being. That's why the comparison can be true. The instinctual makeup of the animals, to a certain extent, can be termed a curse, imposes certain burdens upon them. Yeah, but your instinctual makeup now is different and much more complicated, and will encounter all kinds of obstacles. This is the whole story of civilization and history from this point on.
Again, to return to the idea of blessings and curses, it seems that this concept only comes into being when you're talking about creatures that have needs, and therefore can experience a state of pain, denial, frustration, or the opposite, contentment, when they fulfill their need. In that sense, I will... Or when you say, last, what about it mean the fact that the earth is cursed? Yeah, the earth is cursed. Okay, but I can't... I think it fits in, because it's cursed by Bavurecha. It's cursed by Bavurecha. It's all in relationship to man. In and of itself, it makes no difference. It doesn't matter. If there was no relationship between man and the earth, then the concept, according to me, wouldn't make any sense. But since there is a connection, and man depends upon it, so then with regard to your relationship to the earth, it's going to be cursed. Meaning to say that it will not yield up. There'll be impediments. There'll be frustration. But you see, it's followed by the codes for Daradar, thorns and thistles. That's not something which would make a difference to the earth itself. It's only with regard to man. If man needed thorns and thistles, so that would be a blessing, but he doesn't. So I believe it's an impediment. So in that sense, the animals too, we said, all the animals in a sense, would be cursed because they all have needs. And in order for these needs to be met, they have to extract something from the external world, so to that extent it's a curse. You have to be you see these animal shows. You see how they have to traverse. You know, they're dependent upon external conditions. If they hunt, so then hunting season. If they live off the land, they're subjected to a lot of difficulties, so to speak. That's so simple. So, in the obtainment of their needs. Now, the nachash, which we have taken to mean a representation of the instinctual needs of man, is going to be more cursed. Now we'll have to see exactly where and why it's more cursed, but that's what I wanted to say. In other words, what we're doing is which we're not dealing with it as though it's an actual snake. We're translating the ideas into the metaphorical snake, into the Yetzirah. The question of why it's addressed in the form not to man but to the snake, the Torah has seen fit to isolate the various components. There's a reason for that, but let's just take that for granted for the time being, because we see that the woman spoke to the snake, but the snake is the woman, right? So there must be two different components. The woman here represents the intelligence. You know, there's a